Hi, and welcome to Stories of Climate Change Hope, the podcast that brings you a little bit of hope every other week. My name is Stefan Schwartmann, and today we listen to the climate story of Nikunj Pathak. Nikunj has worked in a national research institute in India in the water and sanitation sector, and he also graduated from a study program in Bayreuth, Global Change Ecology. And Nikunj, you're also a poet, and you brought a poem for us.
Yeah, of course.
Hi, Nikunj. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm doing okay. Although the situation is not good here, but so far I could say I'm safe and healthy.
What do you mean the situation is not good?
The corona situation, because the number of cases are rising every day, and now the government, like our state government, is imposing a weekend lockdown. So we will have lockdown on Sundays and maybe on Saturdays as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's a bit problem, because earlier there was a short time when we saw sort of a decreasing curve, like the number of patients were decreasing, or it was constant for like few days. But now the cases are rising again, which is not a good sign.
Is it like a second wave, or is it still like the first wave?
I think we are still in the middle of first wave, but it's really like a wave where like some days you see like 10 or 12 positive cases in a day, and then for a few days you won't get a single. And then again, after 3 or 4 days, you'll get 4 or 5 new cases. So the rate is not constant, but it is increasing. That's a worry.
In the whole country or in a region? I mean, 4 or 5 cases in the whole country, or in your city?
In my city. I'm talking about my city. Yeah, but if we, because India is a huge country, so if we sum together for all cities, states, counties and all, then I think in the last 4 or 5 days, we are getting 25,000 plus cases every day.
Okay.
So, which is a lot.
Yeah.
And like few weeks back, we were getting somewhere between 15,000 to 20,000, and before that 10,000 cases per day, and even before that, like in, I guess in May or something, we were getting 5 or 6,000 cases per day. So now the number has increased like 4 or 5 times for all over India. That's a problem.
And the lockdown is a little bit lighter, so you are allowed to, I mean, before you were not allowed to leave the house at all, is that right?
Yeah. I think in the last week of March, it was like a nationwide lockdown, and it was very strictly enforced. So we were not allowed to leave our home, and only some essential shops were open, like groceries, or, you know, if you want to buy milk or groceries, vegetables. Even those shops were, you know, open for a very few hours. And after some time, they even closed that, and there was like a, how to say, the home delivery service, which was started. So if you want to order groceries, or you want to buy milk and all, you can just order it on the website or call the shop owner, then he will deliver it to you. But this whole thing, this lockdown ended in June, or in the beginning of June actually. So they started relaxing measures, like allowing people to go out, work, allowing market to open. So slowly the things started opening up, and now the situation is, I mean, I would say 80% or 90% of market is open, and people can go out and buy food, even you can go to your work. But still, if there are new cases, they suddenly close the area and declare it a containment zone, and then for at least 1 or 2 weeks, they impose lockdown. But these lockdowns are now more localized. Earlier, the lockdown was like nationalized all over India. Now there are small lockdowns within the city or within few districts of a state, like that.
Yeah. I mean, I wish you all the best for that. Did it also affect you? I mean, you worked before in water research, I think. You did field research, right?
Yeah. And in the beginning of this year, I started teaching here in a new college. So I was teaching the course Environmental Studies and Disaster Management to the horticulture students. So Yeah, it was going well until the end of March when the lockdown was announced. And since then, the classes, like, they've completely turned off the lectures. College is closed, classrooms are empty. And yeah, now there are some online classes, but it's only for a selected courses, because they cannot have like all the teachers giving Zoom classes, because that's not feasible. And there is also uncertainty over exams, like how they are going to conduct exams, because some students live in the village or in like remote areas, so where they don't have enough internet and computer or laptop facility. So which is why the whole education system is in a challenging position right now, and the college management is finding it difficult to cope up with that. So they simply have closed the college, and yeah, they're waiting for the instructions from the education ministry.
Right.
Yeah, let's see what happens.
Yeah. So how are you using your time, or how do you prepare for the next phase? Or are you looking for a job now, or are you planning like your own project?
Yeah. I mean, both the things are, I'm doing simultaneously, because I was planning to start a project this year by September, but because of Corona, it's really hard to start a new project, at least this year, because the situation is still evolving and we don't know what will happen next month or after next week. So now I have decided to start a project probably next year, and I'm trying to do all the groundwork right now. Preparing the proposal, talking to different people who are interested. So, and I hope if all goes well, I might be able to start a project next year. And meanwhile, I'm also looking for some remote work, like a work from home type of opportunities, where I can still sit at home and do some research or work for a think tank or an institute, something like that.
That sounds really, really good. Yeah. So the project would be your own initiative, and you would apply for funding. So would you go back to the field where you, the sector where you came from? Is it related to water and sanitation, or is it something completely new?
It's basically related to climate change. So I'm trying to do a climate adaptation project in a village. So here in India, we have a scheme federal government, which is called like Smart Village. So under Smart Village concept, they are trying to prepare like some sort of climate management plan or water management plan or something like that. So you have to make a village smart, like by introducing modern technologies or scientific concepts, you know, to improve agriculture, productivity, or whatever area you select. So I'm trying to do a project with a village authority, something related to climate change or climate adaptation. So we are still in the preliminary stage of the project. One of my friend is helping me out. So he's also trying, like working with me to develop the concept. And then we will look, like apply for funding. And hopefully if we get funding, we can start the project next year. So it will be a field-based project, as far as I know.
How do you approach people, or how do you want to approach people from this village? Or what is your experience or expectation? Are people open to like outside help, or are they looking forward that, for example, that your project wants to help them, or are there some difficulties that you're facing?
Whatever you said, it's like combination of all those things that you said. So because I have worked with the villages in the past, like when I was working with the research institute in India, so there was one project by WHO, which was based on water and sanitation. So there was a village which was declared and in India, if you have like 100% toilet in your village, then you get a prize. So this village was given a prize somewhere in 2007 or 8, and because they did a really good work in sanitation, so they constructed toilets for each household, and they had a really good water management plant or water supply system for the village. So the WHO was very impressed with that, and they thought, let's conduct a study of this village and see how these steps that these villagers have taken is improving their water quality. So I was there, so I had to talk to the villagers and survey household, like you have to go to each house, do a survey, check their water samples, take their water samples and then check in the laboratory. And we had to somehow correlate the data, like the water quality data, with the practices that they are doing, you know, how they are storing water, what is the impact of, you know, having a toilet, does it improve water quality? And there were some other projects like this that I did in my research work before. So in that time, I realized like there is like interest in the villagers, but it depends on the village authority, because some, we call it like in India, a village head is called as Sarpanch, and there is like the authority which works in a village is called Gram Panchayat. So Gram means village in Hindi. So you have to talk to the Gram Panchayat and first tell your proposal that, yeah, I come from this city or this institute, and I want to do this thing for your village. And if they are interested, they might listen to you. And then they say, okay, so what you need from me? And if they have certain problems, then they will say, okay, I can't give you money, or, you know, you have to come this time because, and you can't do these things because people are not happy or whatever. So if they have any problems, they will tell you, and then you have to manage with whatever they are saying. And they sometimes, if they are very generous, they might provide you one employee from their office and say, okay, contact this guy, he will help you out. We will be very happy if you do a project in our village. Or sometimes they will simply deny, saying, yeah, there is no problem here, you don't come, you know, you people come from cities and, you know, try to give some knowledge to our villagers and you create a bigger problem. So everything is fine here, just don't show up. So yeah, it depends totally on the village authority. You might get like a red carpet welcome sometimes, or you might get rejected. So anything can happen. As of now, I'm trying to first find a village which is like accessible, where I can go and visit, and then maybe talk to the authority and convince them for a project. And if those things work, then we will decide what to do next.
Yeah, when the Gram Panchayat, the village authority, is it Gram Panchayat?
Yeah, Gram Panchayat. Yeah.
Gram Panchayat.
Yeah.
When they are open to your idea, to your project, what are the expectations?
So, first thing, they're very peculiar about the impact, you know. They don't want, like, if, for example, if you, like in my earlier experience, we went to one village and we did some random testing. We had some like water testing kits and we said, okay, you know, there is some problem with your water quality, and you should do something about it. We want to see your water source and see your water supply system. So in the beginning, this guy, like the village head, was very open to us, like, okay, you can do whatever you want. But then when he saw that, okay, we are taking water samples and then telling people that this water is bad, then he started complaining, saying, hey, why are you influencing people? So their expectation is that you come, you do a project, but don't influence or, you know, talk to the villagers. You come, you do your work. And they always try to see what is the purpose of this project, how it is going to benefit them. So is there any short-term or long-term benefit associated with it? So that's one thing they're very peculiar about. But then there are also some village heads who really want to do something for their village. So they are like very open and they say, yeah, we will help you in the best possible way. So yeah, they're different type of people. It's really hard to generalize, but there is a lot of expectation in terms of the benefits that the project might give.
Sometimes they don't want to know, the villagers, if the water quality is really bad.
Yeah.
Would it affect, I guess they are like elected, so they're like regional politicians.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, you can say, because then they will come and ask, hey, you know, you were saying everything is well, we are getting good quality water, but, you know, these researchers are telling us that the water quality is not good. So what are you doing about that? You know, things like that. So they don't want to create a problem.
I get, yeah, it seems like they don't want to make the challenge, the problem is there, right? They just don't want to put it out in the open so everyone knows.
Yeah.
The quality isn't great.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah, you're doing a really great job, and this, I guess, would also put pressure to these local authorities, yeah, to initiate some change, yeah, to improve the quality of the water.
Yeah, and sometimes they are like quite opposite. Some village heads will be like, okay, yeah, you identified there is a problem. Yeah, I know that, but you know, nobody was listening to me. I complained to the, you know, higher authorities, and they were saying, no, we will do something about it. But now, since you are here, please, you know, convey my message to the government and try to do something for us. So a lot of times they're also hopeful when we go there, you know. They see, okay, here is a guy coming from a national institute, you know, working for the federal government. So he might help me with this problem. So you see both type of people on the field. Some who restrict you or restrain you, and some who welcome you and are very hopeful that you will definitely change their life or at least do something for them.
And they are probably dependent on what the higher level of government, how they will support them in terms of finance also to tackle these problems.
Yeah, definitely.
So is this also part of your work that you you're in contact with all different stakeholders who could tackle this challenge? And you would report to a higher authority and report about your findings and recommendations, what could be changed?
Yeah. So, like, I'll give you an example. Like, when we were doing this survey in a village, then once we do the survey and analyze the data, then we will report to the district authority, like who manages the water supply or the water supply department. And we will say, okay, we went to this village, we carry out household survey and sampling, and these are the results. And in our recommendation, there are some problems, for example, with the total coli farms. You know, there is some sort of contamination there. So you must tell the water quality operator to, you know, do some treatment things. So then we, at some point, we will also recommend treatments, like what they can do. But that was all like our recommendation. Then it's up to the city authority or local authority to decide. We would give recommendations based on our findings, and then they will have to act upon it. But that was like their choice.
Are you working then maybe with other stakeholders or NGOs who could, or like civil society organizations who are doing like more communication work or doing campaigns to make some of the issues more open, so they would actually be tackled then by the higher authority? Do you work with those organizations maybe too?
Right now, I'm actually trying to do that, because the next project that I want to set up next year, in that project, I want to bring these people from NGOs and other civil societies and maybe some other independent researchers or activists who can help me. But right now, I'm trying to, you know, communicate with them and see if they are interested in the project that I am planning to do. Because earlier I was like working with a research institute, so I was like in a role. So there were some limitations of my role. I could only do certain things. But now if I'm working independently on my own project, then I have more freedom to decide who are going to be my partners or, you know, people who I can talk to or bring in this project. So yeah. For the coming project, I'm definitely looking at that option.
For me, it always sounds really, really brave if you decide to become independent and plan and implement your own project. I think it's a really brave step, you know, where you worked for a research institute and you had other people to report to and you were on their payroll, but then when you create your own project, then yeah, I don't know. I guess I would be a little nervous somehow about I don't know how to make a living and if everything works out. But I think I imagine that you also grow with your responsibilities. So even though in the beginning, how do you feel about it?
I mean, yeah, I mean, obviously, to earn a living is very important. So what I am planning right now is to like have a job which gives me money for survival, so to say.
Yeah.
And then parallelly use my knowledge and experience that I have gained over the years to do an independent project, at least make some, how to say, contribute something to the society I grew up in. And I know this is not easy, but it's not also very difficult if you try. I feel there are many people who are interested and who are somehow looking for an opportunity to cooperate or collaborate. So I just want to create that platform. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking right now. But as you go ahead, things change and you get different type of experiences and things may go right or wrong, but whatever, I just want that my purpose should be the same all over, to do something for my society, to contribute positively and make people aware about the problems that we are facing, whether it is climate change or water quality problem, water pollution or sanitation or whatever.
Yeah, I imagine as this challenge is so grave, I hope and I imagine that you will find the adequate and really, really good support and partners that want to work with you. There's something else. So what is the relationship between like sanitation, water quality and climate change? I guess not everyone would know, and I'm also not sure. Could you maybe explain this?
I mean, there are not, how to say, very conclusive evidences about the impact of climate change on sanitation, because there's still research going on in this area. But definitely there are relationship between climate change and sanitation, because what we see or we are now seeing through, like the change in weather patterns or precipitation or drought period, it will definitely affect our water resources. And these water resources are pretty much very important, because if, for example, if I'm constructing a toilet in a village and saying, okay, if I provide you a toilet, then, it would be really good for your health and, everything is going to be fine, but there is no water in the toilet. And why the water is not coming? Because the water reservoir is dry. And why the water reservoir is dry? Because, the rain didn't come. The rainfall was not enough for filling the reservoir. So why the rainfall was not enough for filling the reservoir? Because, there was a long period of drought. And why there was a long period of drought? Oh, maybe because, climate is changing or the weather patterns are changing. So this is like a cycle. So when you want to develop a toilet to provide better sanitation facilities, you have to consider the overall picture of climate change. Like if you don't have enough water resources or for an area, and then you're planning to build a toilet, then you have to be very sure what's going to happen. So I guess these problems are somehow interrelated. But as I said earlier, there's still research going on, and I hope we will get to know more in future.
Yeah, I hope so too. And I guess under climate change, it could get worse with increasing frequency of droughts.
Yeah, and I think I was reading a report by WHO, and not by WHO, I guess it was UNICEF and one more international organization. And they were saying that at least 4.5 billion people don't have safe access to water resources in the world. So, and a majority of them live in developing countries in Asia and Africa, and maybe also in Latin America. So a lot of people don't have access to water resources which are really safe and good to use. And when these water resources are under stress, either due to drought or flood, then you have a big problem. So I guess climate change is really going to change these how we manage our water resources. And that's how I feel that sanitation is also an important component that we should start studying about, like how climate change is going to change these things.
I think that the people in the Western world should be really aware of this and think about their own water consumption. And I know in some regions where water is really scarce, I guess Australia, they are really efficient in using water. But for example, I mean, I would say, I'm not 100% sure, but I would say in Europe, this this awareness is not there yet. So there are a lot of people who use a lot of water, may it be taking a bath or taking a shower. And I would never tell anyone not to do this. It's everyone's decision. It's just if people would be aware, and if they knew someone personally and knew their situation, someone whose water availability is much less, maybe they would come to think and maybe start to try to change their own consumption behavior.
Yeah, I mean, it's really important, because and one more sector, like we consume water, that's also an important, I would say, factor in water availability. But then we also have to see how the industries and agriculture sector is consuming water, because they also use a lot of water resources. So like here in India, we have problems in some areas which were, how to say, were really good, or they had like enough water resources in the past. But since they started growing sugarcane or rice or other water intensive crops, they are now facing a challenge of water scarcity. So it was not like the human consumption that really created a problem, but it was mostly the agriculture production. So the use of water in agriculture, which changed the dynamics of water availability. So I think when we talk about water resources and climate change, then we also have to think about, you know, agriculture and industrial use and other things like that.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, percentage-wise, that's probably much, much more also in the Western world. And I still think that, everyone needs to work together on these issues and, you know, not wait until the government introduces some new progressive policy, and then only then I will change my own behavior. We would have to start right now, and also maybe support some organizations that are advocating for more progressive policies, and not wait for something to change for the better, but be active. Yeah, like you said, you wanted to contribute to improving the society, or the conditions in the society.
I totally agree with you about like the responsibility that we share, and also like we shouldn't wait for the policymakers, you know, to change something. We should start, you know, working individually. And I think that's very important, because if you want to fight any problem, whether it is climate change or even COVID, you have to take individual responsibilities. You cannot just wait for government or civil society to tell you. If you know something and you are capable of doing something, then just go ahead and do it. Yeah, that's what I think so, which I feel is very important.
I strongly agree. Thank you for listening to the first part of my conversation with Nikunj. The second part will be released in a few days. So let's end this episode as always with our little commitment. So we want to commit ourselves to the healing of our world and our society. We want to bridge gaps and decrease the separation inside society and between us and our environment. And we can do one part by leading conversations about climate change and talk about our personal story. And we want to do so by acting responsibly and respectfully, even when it is challenging. And we will support others in their part and ask for help when we need it. And we will spread a little bit of hope every other day. Thanks goes to Coco for the creative support and the logo design. And also thanks to Vulcan Recorder for the music contribution. You can listen to the podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and all other podcast distribution apps on your phone. The next episode will be released in 1 week or 2 weeks on a Sunday evening. Thank you for listening and make sure to tune in next time. Bye-bye.